Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is U.S. Trade Representative Chief Ag Negotiator Doug McCaleb, who joins us to discuss the administration's agricultural trade priorities. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Environmental Protection Agency rejected a petition asking for stricter regulation of confined animal feeding operations. Groups who filed the petition argued many more CAFOs should have to obtain discharge permits and be subject to federal regulation. Farm groups welcomed the decision not to beef up the regulatory oversight. EPA says it plans to set up an advisory subcommittee to explore how to address CAFO pollution. A World Trade Organization dispute panel ruled against China's right to levy retaliatory tariffs on American agricultural goods. The Chinese tariffs were placed 5 years ago in retaliation to Trump administration tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. The WTO ruled China acted inconsistently by imposing $3 billion in duties on everything from almonds and walnuts to pork and dairy products. The Biden administration has opted against reversing the tariffs imposed during the Trump years and has also continued to block new appointees to the WTO appellate system, arguing both approaches help the U.S. with global trade leverage. But that wasn't the only trade news of the week. The U.S. has opted to take the next step in its battle against Mexico's restrictions on the imports of genetically modified corn. The U.S. is pursuing a dispute settlement panel with Mexico, an escalation from the consultations between the two countries that have been ongoing. American trade officials argue the issue is not just about U.S. corn exports, but rather the broader issue of biotechnology regulation in the context of trade relationships. To start our conversation with Ambassador McCaleb, we asked him to explain why the Biden administration has progressed to this next step.
The Biden administration, and specifically the U.S. Trade Representative's office here, had repeatedly expressed concerns with Mexico regarding their policy regarding biotechnology and the importation of corn. Mexico's policy was not only unfair, but it also was not based in science. And so Ambassador Tai, Secretary Vilsack had traveled to Mexico. I was down there on two trips as well. And we'd repeatedly reminded the Mexicans that it was important to adhere to science. Unfortunately, the consultations we've had to this point have not resolved the situation. So our announcement is that we will be moving to a panel under USMCA to resolve this issue and to ensure that Mexico returns to science as the basis for their importation policy on grain.
Mm-hmm. So let's take the optimistic view from the U.S. perspective here and say that this dispute panel process ultimately goes in favor of the U.S. just for the sake of argument. You're still dealing with the same economy in Mexico, the same consumer in Mexico. Does USTR and does the Biden administration believe that the Mexican consumer is interested in purchasing the products made from the American biotech corn?
The demand in Mexico for U.S. corn has been very strong, and we have continued to see a very strong trade in corn, even despite the changes in policy from the Mexican government. Demand still remains very firm on their part. So we just want to make sure that the policy of the Mexican government doesn't undermine what has been a very strong trading relationship. We currently enjoy trade that is very robust between our two countries. We have about $28 billion per year of agricultural products flowing to Mexico. And again, we want to make sure that the Mexican government's policy is rooted in science and that they ensure that they show risk assessment and they do the work that every other government, and quite frankly, Mexico has done historically, and that is to follow the science when making decisions about the importation of grain.
Mm-hmm. So taking this next step this week, what does the administration envision as the timeline for this dispute then going forward?
Yeah, so this is the first time that the sanitary, phytosanitary provisions of USMCA have been exercised. But we would anticipate a panel being convened and that process being concluded early to mid 2024, using other dispute panels as a model, if you will, You have to go through the process of getting the panelists named. And Canada, by the way, has been a partner throughout the process. They've been very much involved as well.
Well, and looking at the agreement and looking at the trading partners and the agricultural issues within it, the U.S. has some experience with the dispute process with Canada over dairy issues. What can you offer in terms of where things stand between the U.S. and Canada in regards to dairy policy?
Yeah, the United States won a case against Canada on dairy importation. I believe it was November of 2021. And unfortunately, Canada's implementation of the outcome of that case has fallen short of providing U.S. dairy farmers, our cheese products, our milk, true market access into Canada. So we announced in January a new action under USMCA, a new panel that would focus in on the remaining areas where Canada has fallen short on providing our farmers true access. And so July 19th, July 20th, the panel arguments took place. We are anticipating an outcome from that panel very soon. And the Biden administration, USTR specifically, is going to keep on this until our farmers get the kind of market access that they were promised under USMCA.
We'll talk India, China, and more with Ambassador McCaleb right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. The Biden administration may be focusing its trade policy efforts on labor and environmental standards around the world, but Ambassador Doug McCaleb says American agriculture is still benefiting from overseas relationships.
We are experiencing record years of agricultural exports, $196 billion of ag products out the door last year. That's something we want to build on. We want to continue to open up new markets. We want to continue to hold trading partners accountable to make sure that they are honoring the agreements that we have in place. The priorities that you've heard Ambassador Tai speak about are to ensure that while we are opening up new trade, while we are expanding trade, that we want to make sure that environmental stewardship is not left out of that conversation. U.S. farmers have exhibited for decades and generations excellent stewardship of soil and water resources. USDA is making record investments in climate smart agriculture. We want to make sure that those are part of conversations that were happening in the Indo-Pacific, in Kenya, in the Americas, to make sure that stewardship is part of the conversation on trade. I think, and all of us think, that American farmers and ranchers have an excellent story to tell, and that should be part of those discussions that we're having with trading partners.
Well, and one specific trading partner has taken an export ban position here as of late, speaking, of course, of India in relation to rice exports. The rice and wheat industries have been calling on the U.S. government to take some action on India's stock holdings for quite a while. Does an export ban give USTR an impetus to perhaps step up its engagement with India, perhaps to the point of a dispute process?
Yeah, we have been heavily engaged with the Indian government on agricultural issues. And I would mention, Spencer, that we have experienced the U.S. Tariff relief on 10 separate classifications of agricultural commodities just in 2023, just in the past 6 months. Many of those have been associated with the Indian marketplace, so they are a very important trading partner for us. Certainly, you mentioned export bans on rice. We are closely monitoring and working with the Indian government on this topic. I think in times of trade uncertainty, as we've seen stemming out of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that trade is a means of getting through successfully what are very uncertain times. We're going to continue to stay engaged with the Indian government on that. I think the G7, the G20, many countries have all bound together to say that we don't believe that the export bans are an appropriate action to take in times of uncertainty. We don't want to have price volatility. We don't want to have supply chain uncertainty.
I want to wrap up asking about this week's World Trade Organization decision in regards to the Chinese retaliatory tariffs on the 232 tariffs issued during the Trump administration. We've seen the U.S. come to resolution with some other countries on this issue. We mentioned India, as we were just discussing, but the EU, the UK, other countries as well. What needs to happen for that level of resolution to be achieved with China?
Yeah, so we are definitely working closely with our Chinese counterparts. I think as their government periodically reconstitutes itself, there's a bit of a pause in terms of having counterparts to engage with. All of us are certainly engaging heavily with the Chinese. We have a very important trade relationship with them on agriculture. We have many topics to continue to work through with them. The U.S. Just, you know, 3-4 years ago was having to put program payments out there to the tune of about $16 billion. We recently worked on revising those figures with the World Trade Organization. Those are down to about $3 billion. So what that says is that trade is working. Farmers are getting products sold and out the door, and that's what they want. Farmers want to get sold commodity out the door rather than seeing a program payment coming in the door.
Ambassador McCaleb, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel reports on the power of major export players in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Total U.S. agricultural exports set a value record in 2022, reaching almost $196 billion, according to USDA figures. This chart shows American ag exports since 2000, as well as the top countries on the receiving end of shipments. China bought $38 billion worth of U.S. ag products last year, making it America's largest export market. Mexican and Canadian purchases both topped $28 billion, while Japan and the European Union rounded out the top five. USDA figures show these five trading partners accounted for a little more than 60% of American agricultural exports last year. Aside from a dip during the trade war with China in 2018 and 2019, that figure has been largely consistent since the turn of the century. So even as the total export figure grows, the demand from America's biggest customers has grown with it. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue a trade conversation now with Aubrey Betancourt of the Almond Alliance of California and Peter Bachman with the USA Rice Federation. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us to dive in a little bit on what the current trade environment means for your respective commodities. And I want to go to you first, Aubrey, because we did see some news this week. The World Trade Organization ruling against China's retaliatory tariffs on the Section 232 trade dispute, that long-running steel and aluminum issue. As we kind of set aside the lengthy verbiage of the ruling and get down to brass tacks, what does this actually mean for almond producers in California and around the country?
Well, our hope is that this returns access to what is and continues to be a growing and desirable marketplace for our product. China bounces into our top demand globally as an export partner. The Pacific Rim, of course, is the largest export partner for almonds and largest export partner for California specifically. Our rates, our shipping into China has been increasing exponentially, even with the tariffs. And so to be able to have the tariffs removed and allow us even fuller access, this is a huge opportunity for almonds. We're looking forward to it being very bullish and want to continue to see the demand for our product continue to grow unhindered and unburied.
And of course, this ruling is a continuation of the, as I mentioned, the long-running steel and aluminum tariff saga. It's 5 years, really, since the initial start of the Trump administration's trade war. Some would argue it started even before then. Then, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic, all the supply chain disruptions that happened there. It's been a tough time for folks producing almonds. And I wonder, what have these last 5 years taught you about, you know, market diversification and whether or not you have enough buyers of your product right now?
I think there's not a problem with enough buyers. One of the things we learned very quickly in the last 5 years between tariffs and then having, it was kind of a perfect storm. You had that domino effect of tariffs combined with supply chain disruption, combined with increasing growing demand for our product as well. But it did teach us that resilience, similar to what we learned in supply chain, is about diversification of options and opportunities. And we also have always come back to, as 80% of the world's supply of almonds coming from the United States, when American almonds are not on the shelf somewhere, America's not on the shelf somewhere. So this has even bigger, broader implications with regards to, if we're not opening access and developing other markets, then we have competition opening access and developing other markets, either taking advantage of markets that we've developed in the past, as is the case with Australia and India, that we've seen over the last couple of years. When we weren't on the playing field, others took advantage of that. And the other side to that too is just in the greater geopolitical. If we're not out there on the field, competition like China with other products or other products from other nations are out there in the field as well.
Well, and Peter, let's talk rice now and look at last week's USDA reports. Rice was one of the sole folks that said maybe a bigger, bigger crop this year, even a bigger response than the previous reports. I wonder, when you look at the big rebound in production that the industry is looking at in 23 compared to 22, what does that mean for the American producer on the global export stage?
For us, we're really excited about this. We think it's an opportunity to have more supply in the market. We'll be able to be more competitive price-wise, quality-wise, reliability-wise than a lot of other players on the world stage. And so we think that we're going to be able to regain some of the lost market share that we experienced and saw over the last 2 years in Central America and Latin America. And also pick up some more market share back in Asia and throughout the Middle East. So we see this as a good opportunity for our prices to be competitive and have a market that we can really compete in well.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Peter Bachman with the USA Rice Federation says India's decision to ban much of its rice exports is going to have different impacts around the world.
This is, you know, unfortunate timing for the ban for a lot of folks that are in food insecure places, but it's a great timing for our farmers because we have one of our biggest crops in the last decade coming off of the field here in the next couple of weeks and months. And so with India out of the game, you know, that provides more demand for our product. And so I think we're going to be able to fill some of those gaps over the next couple of months, the next year. As India is out of the market in long grain, non-basmati rice and we see it as a positive in the short term, but obviously, as we've talked about in the past with AgriPulse and others, that this is a long-term problem because India will, you know, again, build their stocks and eventually dump that rice on the world market very cheaply. And so that is going to displace us down the road.
So you mentioned that long-running issue of India's stockholding, and this is something that the rice industry, as well as your friends in the wheat industry, have asked the USTR to take India to the WTO on this, or at least raise it as an issue through trade dialogue. How does this current ban that we're seeing impact those calls? I mean, does it make them louder? How does this impact you all?
I think it absolutely should make the calls louder, and we're planning to turn up the heat on the administration in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, pushing to continue our efforts towards getting a WTO case filed. When India is playing games with the world food supply, I think it's definitely time to get their attention through a WTO case, and timing is ripe. So we're not letting up any because of this ban, and we think that, you know, it's absolutely warranted that they take a case and we see some sort of change made long term for India's policies.
Mm-hmm. Aubrey, I want to wrap up the conversation with you, thinking about, you know, playing the long game here and looking at possible export opportunities. You mentioned, you know, the possible other opportunities that are there for the American almond producer. But I do wonder, as you look at from, you know, the tree to the plate, sort of, you know, be it in the U.S. or around the world, what do you think is the biggest hampering right now facing American almond exports? What if it got out of the way, would be the biggest benefit?
To be completely honest, I think it's just global economic conditions right now. Inflation is definitely having an impact. I mean, we're an export product. So as an export product, we like a different status on the dollar right now around the world. So globally, I think that right now is the immediate, you know, hindrance in the way. You know, we also are dealing with recovery from, like I said, we had that perfect domino effect of a supply chain disruption at a time when we had peak demand and a time when we had peak production. And so we're still needing to move a lot of backlogged product, which is also having effect on price. So I would say global economic climate, and then, you know, that is affecting our ability to kind of get out from under some of the last couple of years. So it's hindering our recovery rate a little bit. But there's definitely mid to long range a path forward here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's no secret that trade is critical to American agriculture generally, but rice and almonds specifically. Aubrey, Peter, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through some changes in the nation's corn crop in this week's Map It Out.
Some major corn-producing states could be looking at big changes in their yields this year. USDA's recent August reports offer a look at the department's expectations for 2023 crop production. You can see a look at how corn yield is expected to change across the country on this map. The yellow, green, and blue states are all projected to have better yields in 2023, while the shades of red are expected to yield fewer bushels per acre. Let's look at two of USDA's estimated top five states for corn production this year, Illinois and Minnesota. Like most of the states in the country, the two are expected to produce more corn this year, but USDA expects both will suffer yield losses to the tune of 12 or 13%. Overall, 20 states are expected to improve their corn yields this year, while 12 are expected to decline anywhere between 1 and 18 bushels per acre. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer. Seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA will begin the public hearing process Wednesday to explore changes to the country's federal milk marketing orders. And the American Coalition for Ethanol will hold its annual conference Wednesday through Friday in Minneapolis. As always, we'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.